Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Bad, crazy. Short answer is we don't have a good martini again today, so I hope you enjoyed yesterday's. I also would want to thank our listeners for their very positive feedback to our idea of Mickey Mouse Clubhouse CTU yesterday. We had Mickey Mouse basically in the role of Jack Bauer and Goofy in charge of enhanced interrogation techniques. Jim, if we were to extrapolate this further, I'm guessing that Minnie would probably play the role of Chloe, since she'll do anything Mickey wants, kind of like Chloe do whatever Jack needs. And then you got to have the stuffy bureaucrat who's obsessed with protocols and upset that Mickey is breaking all the rules. So that's probably Donald. He's usually
in
So many ways to go with that. But again, thank you for your positive feedback. We certainly had fun with that, in case you couldn't tell. On to our first bad martini now, though, as our mood completely sours. This is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. A new Marquette Law School poll finds Hillary Clinton with 42% and Donald Trump with 35% among Wisconsin registered voters in a presidential race matchup. 17% say they will vote for neither candidate. Among likely voters, those who say they are certain they will vote in November, Clinton receives 46% to Trump's 37%, 13% saying they will support neither candidate. That's not too surprising, given that Trump got hammered in Wisconsin. Of course, Hillary did too. But in the Senate race, where it's already an uphill fight for Ron Johnson against the guy he beat 6 years ago, Russ Feingold, the registered voter matchup is 45-41 in favor of Feingold. The likely voter matchup is Feingold up 9, 51-42. And if you want to know why, the Democrats say that they're fired up to vote come November, while the Republicans, not so much. Only 78% of Republicans say they are certain to vote in November, a drop of 9 percentage points from the 87% who said so in March. Meanwhile, Democratic intentions to vote have increased, rising in June to 84% certain to vote. So, Jim, when the top of the ticket is suspect, it's going to hurt a lot more than just him.
First of all, we should point out to listeners, it's entirely possible the good martini will go on hiatus for a while. Good news is sparse these days, and a lot of days we're just not going to have it. Some of this news is not surprising coming out of this poll. This was not a state that was ever going to be easy for Republicans. Worth noting that even adding Ryan to the ticket didn't really it helped GOP numbers a bit, but didn't really make it that competitive in 2012. So Trump losing to Hillary in Wisconsin isn't that surprising. It's the Ron Johnson numbers that are really bad. And yeah, you know, Ron Johnson was always going to have a tough time. Higher turnout in a presidential year. He's a pretty darn conservative guy in a state that's purple at best. But you kind of dig into those numbers, Greg. I think your spotlight is really important. Is it that Republicans who might have been open to Trump, remember there's some polls that had close to 89, 90% of Republicans right after he had, you know, solidified his lead and basically made very clear he was going to be the nominee. A lot of Republicans are like, all right, he's our guy. Let's see how he can do. And since then, he has denounced the Mexican judge who was born in Indiana, and then his reaction to Orlando. And I think that a lot of Republicans who might have been open to him or were willing to give him a shot, who had doubts but who felt like he'd won it fair and square and it was time to give the Donald his due and then see how well he could compete, are just growing depressed that there is no better Trump. There is no pivot. There is no preparation for the general election. Unless, of course, you want to see abandoning the NRA right after the NRA endorses them and saying he's going to sign on to the idea of barring people on the terror watch list from purchasing firearms. He's not unifying the party. He's not giving the skeptical Republicans and conservatives much to root for right now. And he's got the easiest case in the world to make against Hillary Clinton. So if there's kind of a silver lining to this dark cloud of a martini, Greg, it's that, look, we have a couple of weeks until Cleveland. For a long while, there was talk about an uprising in the convention, and then Trump won, and then he's going to have enough delegates. And like, okay, you know, the delegates are likely to all fall in line, and we're not going to have much drama in Cleveland. Well, if he's doing this badly, if he really is, if his polls are looking bad, he's showing no signs of just coherence on the stump. Yesterday, he attacked he said, you know, our troops were stealing money out of Iraq, just one thing after another. And basically, Republicans on Capitol Hill have to hide from the media because they don't want to be asked, you know, do you stand by what Donald Trump said today? Maybe the pain of tossing him in Cleveland is less painful than having him as the nominee. And if you keep seeing poll numbers like this coming out of Wisconsin and other polls indicating that, you know, Utah looks tied and Kansas he's actually trailing a little bit, then maybe there's nothing to lose by going with, you know, some other Republican. Some would argue any other Republican.
There's even more bad news in this poll. Respondents were asked whether each of four traits described Clinton and Trump. Clinton is described as someone who is honest by 28%, while Trump is seen as honest by 32%. So he actually edges her a little bit there. 42% say Clinton is someone who cares about people like me, while only 27% say this describes Trump. And somewhere Mitt Romney's going, man, those are terrible cares about people like me numbers. And Trump gets killed on issues like could handle a national crisis well, has the qualifications to be president. More people in Wisconsin are worried about the Trump University case than whether Hillary Clinton broke the law with her private email server, although both are pretty lopsided in the direction of being concerned. 61-38 concerned versus not concerned with Clinton. 63% are bothered by the Trump University case, while 34% say they are not. So that's a total wash now. Congratulations.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know which Republican candidates didn't have fraud lawsuits against them?
All the others?
All of them except Trump.
All right. On to the second martini, which could be classified as bad or crazy. The issue of guns is very much in the news, of course, in the wake of Orlando. And now it looks like the Senate will at least allow some votes on a couple of issues related to the no-fly list and the terrorist watch list and that sort of thing. It's a response from the Republican leadership after the Democratic filibuster yesterday and in early into Thursday morning. But Joe Manchin, you might remember him teaming up with Pat Toomey a couple of years back after Newtown for the expanded background check legislation. He was on Morning Joe today and was frustrated that the Constitution is kind of getting in our way in stopping these people. Here's what he had to say.
The problem we have, and really the firewall that we have right now, is due process.
Yeah.
It's all due process. So we can all say, yeah, we want the same thing, but how do we get there? If a person is on a terrorist watch list, like the gentleman, the shooter in Orlando, he was twice by the FBI. We were briefed yesterday about what happened. But that man was brought in twice. They did everything they could. The FBI did everything they were supposed to do, but there was no way for them to keep him on the NICS list or keep him off the gun buy list. There was no way to do that. So can't we say that if a person's under suspicion, they should be a five-year period of time that we have to see if good behavior, if this person continues the same traits? Maybe we can come to that type of an agreement. But due process is what's killing us right now.
First of all, Jim, I think we've pretty much established over the past couple of days that the FBI probably didn't do everything that they possibly could have done. But it's good to know that Joe Manchin is squealing his tires over the Bill of Rights right now, because while it would be nice to be able to have some checks on these folks, you can't just randomly destroy people's due process without cause.
You know, Greg, don't you remember him running ads showing him shooting a gun?
Yes.
Was it the cap and trade bill or Obamacare he was shooting?
Cap and trade with a 12-gauge, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the whole gist was, you know, he's a very different kind of Democrat, right? He's the kind who stands, you know, sticks by his guns literally and metaphorically. You know, he's not like those Nancy Pelosi types. He's not a gun grabber. Well, here he is. And the second thing is, Fourth Amendment restrictions against search and seizure. It's so hard. Good God. Like, this, you know, like West Virginia, you should be tossing this. Does he listen to himself? You can't just, you know, these constitutional restrictions on the power of government are killing us. No, they're not. No, he's bad. He's a bad. All the arguments about, you know, Joe Manchin being a different kind of Democrat should just be, just toss him. Just not, there's nothing there. He's just, might as well be Pelosi.
Well, I don't know if we have anybody competent running against him this year. I don't think we do. That's expected to, you know, really give him a run for his money, unfortunately. So, but that would be pretty prime, because one state that Trump's probably going to do pretty well in, considering Hillary Clinton saying she's going to kill the coal industry, should be West Virginia. So if we could get a competitive race out of that, Joe Manchin might be in a little bit of trouble. But
there you go.
Let's go to the crazy martini for sure. Hugh Hewitt. We just featured him last week on his radio show being very, very troubled about Donald Trump and saying, man, it looks like we're going to have to do something drastic here. It's stage four cancer. You can't just ignore it. The plane is crashing into the mountain. Republicans have to do something in Cleveland or sooner, or this is going to be an unmitigated disaster. Today in the Washington Post, Hugh Hewitt says, under no circumstances can we ditch Donald Trump because otherwise Hillary Clinton's going to win. And he explains his 180 here. He says, with his undisciplined comments about federal district judge Gonzalo Curiel the week before the attack in Orlando, Trump was losing ground in the confidence of many Republicans who have reluctantly backed him. But if he sticks with the tone and focus of Monday's speech, which was on national security, Republicans will stay with him. He says that Trump did a good job with that speech by identifying the enemy and coming off as much stronger than Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. He says he also looked good at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Forum a few days before that. He says Trump is positioned to make the case that Clinton is the exact wrong person to deal with this, given her work at the State Department, her inability to secure classified information, and so forth. So, hey, if he can just get rid of the off-the-cuff remarks, Jim, and stick to the script, things could be fine here, and Republicans would be foolish now to kick him to the curb. Just about a week after Hugh Hewitt said that's exactly what we had to do.
Greg, you and I have expressed admiration for Hugh for a really long time. And you know, when this train wreck of an election year ends, I think we still will. But Hugh, are you feeling okay? I hope you're wearing – I'm in a neck brace right now because it just got whiplash from the sudden shifted position there. You got to give somebody some warning. Hold on. Just brace yourself against something when things are going to swerve that suddenly and dramatically. Yeah, it just doesn't see – I don't see how you go from one to the other. One good speech, really? You know, do you think Trump's going to be, you know, not say something controversial or stupid in the next 48 hours? If Manafort takes away his phone, changes the password on his Twitter account, locks him in a closet, doesn't let him anywhere near a camera, doesn't let him phone into any show, then yeah, maybe Trump will do it. But the message of today's jolt was very clear in a piece on National Review this morning. This is Donald Trump. There is no other Donald Trump waiting to be unveiled. I've been saying this for a while now, and it was really frustrating to see Republicans saying, no, he's going to change. He's going to pivot. There's a different – no, there's not. What's pivoting is the reaction of people like Hugh Hewitt, who go from, oh my goodness, this is a disaster, he's going to ruin a lot of Republicans, he's going to you know, tank the November elections, this is so terrible for us, to the fact that he manages to not, you know, to stick to the script for a day, and all of a sudden everything's hunky-dory again. When do you stop giving him the benefit of the doubt? Greg, do you find between the Orlando shooter discussion and this, we find ourselves stop giving, why are you giving him the benefit of the doubt? It seems to be a recurring theme in our discussions.
Maybe he was just worried about game six tonight. I don't know.
That would explain it a little. He's kind of like, you know, political. Like, we need, you know, we need a column. Got to stick with Trump. Fine.
Man, if the Cavs actually come back and win this thing, I don't think Hugh's going to even care about what happens the rest of the way.
Do you want to know the single most offensive thing I've heard all year? I'm kidding. I'm exaggerating when I say this. But Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown said that he was rooting for the Cavaliers to take it to Game 7 because he wanted it to disrupt the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. I guess if it goes to Game 7, preparations for setting up for the convention, it gets pretty close to that. Greg, if you're an Ohio senator, shouldn't you be rooting for the Cavaliers anyway? Isn't that like a good, you know, a huge chunk of your constituents are pulling for Cleveland to get its first championship in God knows how many decades? Like, wait, it's only to mess with Republicans? What are you, otherwise a Golden State fan? So, Ohio voters, vote this guy out just on that, all right? You don't need a new fair weather. He's not even a fair weather bandwagon fan who abandons them. He only roots for your team in order to mess with Republicans. What? At the very least, primary challenge him. You can find a genuine Cleveland Cavalier Democrat to run for the Senate. Come on.
Maybe LeBron.
There you go. I would take LeBron. Even if he was a Democrat, I would take that. Because, you know, if for no other reason, President Obama, who famously compared himself to LeBron James and likes to say, I'm LeBron, baby, every time he delivers a good speech.
Right.
I'd like to have the real LeBron say, no, you're not.
Craziness in Cleveland. And more than likely, they still won't have a title when the Republicans roll into town, but I could be proven wrong. We'll see. Jim, have a good day. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.